It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last week, Pittsburgh City Council passed gun control measures, including banning the use of assault-style weapons and allowing guns to be temporarily seized from those deemed too dangerous to own them. Opponents say the bills directly violate Pennsylvania law. I went to the office of Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto to talk about these controversial ordinances.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to the Confluence. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Kevin.
Mayor, when do you plan to sign these bills?
We plan to sign them today. Just want to make sure that the council members who had the courage to support them are able to be there as well.
The legislation was amended. The original version would have banned the ownership of certain assault-style weapons, including the AR-15, which was used in the Tree of Life synagogue shootings and the Parkland school shooting a little over a year ago, as well as certain accessories. The amended version bans the use of these weapons. Was that to try to circumvent the state preemption of local gun ordinances?
Well, it was a couple of things. There was almost 4 months of discussion on these bills. There were public hearings, post agendas, experts brought to the table, a series of facts that were added to the bills themselves, and there was discussion with attorneys throughout the process. The culmination of that input really was the impetus for the final changes. The changes themselves, we believe, have not been heard by the courts before and will have the opportunity to be discussed in the courtroom.
Let me follow up on that. So is that meant to be a provision that you can maybe more successfully argue in court when the expected suits are filed so you can say, hey, we're not banning ownership?
That's exactly what we're doing.
Do you feel it's sort of backing down a little bit or is just a more pragmatic move? How would you phrase it?
No, I think that there's two things that we want to challenge in the courts. The first is that this idea that elected officials can be held to criminal charges for voting to try to change a law that they believe is unjust is not only un-American, it's unconstitutional. And we want to be able to remove that from the Pennsylvania criminal code. The second thing is the idea that local government has no rights when it comes to protecting our citizens. We want to be able to challenge that the constitutional rights of our citizens to live is predicated on having common sense laws in place that we feel we need to address if the state is unwilling to.
Some would say, why not just go to the state legislature and say, we really need you to change the laws on how guns are controlled at the municipal level. Why go past them?
Anybody that has taken political science 101 would understand that after 30 years of trying to go that route, at some point it becomes a useless endeavor. If anything, over the past 30 years, the state has gone exactly in the opposite direction, creating the preemption law, creating changes to the criminal code, and really allowing the NRA and the gun manufacturers themselves write the laws for guns in the state of Pennsylvania. So we could go on a fruitless endeavor of traveling up the turnpike to Harrisburg and asking Harrisburg to change its stripes, or we can go through the courts and in the process join with other cities through the courts and try to bring about change in a different manner.
Taking action yourself by council passing, you're signing these bills. As of now, are you breaking state law?
Well, that's going to be for a judge to decide. The law states that it was actually added to the criminal code that elected officials can be held to criminal complaints for addressing gun safety laws in the state of Pennsylvania. In the state of Florida, the NRA was able to get it so that elected officials could be removed from office. There is no other industry anywhere that has those types of provisions. It's preposterous. So are we breaking the law? Possibly. Does that law need to be changed? Absolutely. How do you go about changing it? You challenge it. Are we? Do we have the authority directly as it comes to state present state law involving preemption with guns? It's going to be, again, for a court to decide, does that law need to be changed? Yes, it needs to be changed so that we can save lives. Is this something that just I'm making up? No, this is, doctors will tell you that the damage done by these weapons that are military-style weapons and are and had been advertised as assault rifles by the manufacturers themselves cause more damage to a human body than they can sew back up. And that's what they're designed to do. They're designed to take bodies off of a battlefield, and they shouldn't be in urban settings.
One of the laws allows courts to remove firearms from people who are deemed to be a risk to themselves or others. Who would be able to go to courts to have the firearms removed from others? Loved ones, family members, friends, whom?
This bill would give the family members of an individual who is professing to harm themselves or harm somebody else the ability to go before a judge through due process to have their guns temporarily removed from them. It would also give that same right to law enforcement. Presently, we have rules like this when it comes to domestic abuse, protections from abuse, and we believe that those types of laws need to also apply to anyone who is in a position of hurting themselves or others. And why I say this is a good indication of how this groundswell of support at a local level can help to bring about change is on Friday, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, a Republican, stated that he supports this bill. Am I saying it's because Pittsburgh introduced the bill that all of a sudden he has a change of heart? No, but it's because Pittsburgh and other states and other cities have begun this discussion on these bills that they're now getting attention in Washington, even if they aren't getting any attention in Harrisburg.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WASA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Our guest is Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. Mayor, opponents have said as soon as you sign, they're going to court. The NRA has said it will support citizens who want to legally challenge the ordinances. That means financial support. But can the city afford to defend itself in court?
We have been offered pro bono legal assistance from downtown law firm as well as from national organizations. There will be no cost to the taxpayer. And the NRA can fund this challenge, and they can fund the 50 more that will be coming from cities all across this country until we have legislators who are writing gun laws and not the people who are manufacturing guns simply to get their profits higher.
Three members of council voted against the current bills, Anthony Coghill, Darlene Harris, Teresa Kale Smith, citing state law. Are they wrong?
No, I mean, it's a reason for them to not vote it. Under Mrs. Harris's, though, it was exactly that argument that people used when we banned fracking in the city and that we had no authority to ban fracking. But she joined with us on that bill. I think that there's probably other reasons as well, other than challenging the state law.
You mentioned private criminal complaints. Opponents have again promised to file private criminal complaints against you and the council members who voted for the ordinances. Just how sure are you about legislative immunity?
Well, I think that it applies to any elected official. Otherwise, you would never have the ability to challenge a law. You would always just have to assume that what the law was when you took office will remain the law till the time that you're out of office. If that were the case, women would never have had the right to vote. The civil rights legislation that passed in the 1960s would never have happened. In fact, the Constitution guaranteed slavery. The only way that we've made any great strides in this country is by challenging laws and stating not what is legal, but what is just. And there is a big difference between legality and justice. And in order to be able to make laws just, you have to challenge existing laws. So if the state puts in place laws that say that any elected official that challenges any gun law will face criminal charges, they're basically taking not only the constitutional rights away from elected officials, but they're taking away the very basics of the Constitution, which is and was written to be amended.
You met last week with survivors from the Parkland school shooting, who came to Pittsburgh to support students at Taylor Allardyce and members of the Tree of Life Synagogue. What did you take away from that?
This weekend, we spent a lot of time with the family members of the victims and the students from Parkland. I sat down in my conference room with them for 3 hours, and there was no agenda. We just were talking. And what was very evident and promising was, even though we're still in the mourning stage, just 4 months or 5 months since, they're already in the active stage. So each of those individuals had foundations or organizations. They affected state law in Florida, in New Jersey, in New York. They're very active in making sure that common sense gun laws and gun reform and other laws of creating safer schools and police response and all these different issues get addressed, so no other parent has to go through what they went through. And it's encouraging because I can see where Pittsburgh will be following in those footsteps within the next year. On one hand, it is very disturbing to listen to the stories because it brings back October 27th. But on another sense, and I think why we sat in that room for 3 hours, it's cathartic. And it helps you to realize that others have gone through it in a much more dramatic way and have come out of it in a positive manner of working to bring about social good.
Final question. I believe you're meeting with a group of mayors to talk about the gun issue and to talk about what sort of relationship you can have with gun manufacturers.
Yeah, so there's a couple different takes that mayors around the country are working on, and Pittsburgh's obviously involved in these issues. The one coming up on Wednesday will be in Toledo with a handful of mayors. What we're looking at as cities, we're one of the largest purchasers of guns and of ammunition. And unlike banks, where we choose to have our money, where we require investment back into communities, especially lower income communities, we really don't have any criteria when it comes to which bullets we're buying or which guns we're purchasing. And so we're putting together the beginning of a coalition that will start to look at things like the banning of armor-piercing bullets, which are made to kill police officers, banning high-capacity rifles and rifles that shoot at such a velocity that they create a vacuum when the bullet hits. These types of weapons don't belong in cities, and we should be using our taxpayers' dollars in order to come up with ways that would incentivize good behavior from the gun manufacturers and the ammunition suppliers. So we're having that first discussion on Wednesday. We'll also be having discussions in Annapolis later this summer that will address the issue of hate speech. As you know, several journalists were killed in Annapolis simply because what they wrote. We have gotten into a pattern in this country where things that we would never say publicly are now accepted as the norm. And we need to go back to where we were, because this is not normal. And how do we do that? Because we do know that hate speech creates hate crimes. And we saw that firsthand right here in Pittsburgh. So working together with, I think there's 70 cities since the year 2000 that have faced mass homicides, how do we start that conversation, and then what actions do we take? So although you're seeing activity right here in Pittsburgh on legislation and the challenge to the court on state laws, there's a lot more going on around this country at the city level, which I believe is going to affect the change that we need out of Harrisburg, which is going to affect the change that we need out of Washington. And sometimes you don't get in your car and drive to the Capitol in order to make the change happen. You make the change happen at the local level, and then you wait for them to follow.
Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
The Delphonics were formed in Philadelphia by brothers William and Wilbert Hart and their classmate Randy Kane in the early 1960s. They released a few singles and gained some popularity in their hometown, but didn't really hit their stride until the end of the decade when they teamed up with producer Tom Bell. Their song Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time won the Grammy Award for Best R&B Performance in 1971, and it got a second life of sorts in 1997 when Quentin Tarantino used it, along with La La Means I Love You, as plot elements in his film Jackie Brown. Randy Kane passed away 10 years ago today. For 91.3 WYEP, I'm Joey Spehar.
It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Bankrate.com released a study in which they ranked the best and worst metropolitan areas in the country for people looking to buy a home for the first time. While major cities on the West Coast found themselves at the bottom of the list, Pittsburgh was listed as the number one city where home ownership is attainable, safe, and fun for its residents. Today, we're joined by Arch Ottenreith. He's the president of the Realtors Association of Metro Pittsburgh. Welcome to The Confluence, sir.
Thank you very much.
Arch, the Pittsburgh area, it's gone through a multitude of changes over the last few decades. What about the housing market? Have there been major changes over a certain time period?
Historically, Pittsburgh has an average of 3-5% increase over the past 40 or 50 years, and it continues to stay that way. Certainly, there are certain fluctuations from time to time, like right now in the past couple of years with the interest rates being so low, the prices of the homes have increased a little bit more than maybe 3-5%. We don't have these wild fluctuations that other parts of the country do, for instance, California or Colorado or Florida. They might be have high swings up, but then they have high they have a big swing downwards. So our gradual increase of 3-5% seems to work well for this city.
To clarify, that 3-5%, is that in terms of number of units, houses sold, or is it the total value of all properties sold?
It's the average prices of the homes.
The Realtors Association of Metro Pittsburgh, what's your area of coverage? What's Metro Pittsburgh?
Sure, and it's changing. 40 years ago, 30 years ago, it used to be the five-county area, which was Pittsburgh and the four contiguous counties, which is Beaver, Butler, Washington, and Westmoreland. But as Pittsburgh has grown, so has the area, and the multi-list has grown, so has the area. So it's now went from maybe five counties. It can be nine, eight, nine, or even 10 counties.
Okay. According to those rankings that I mentioned at the top, the Pittsburgh area is number one for first-time home buyers. Can you give us a sense of your business? How many are first-time buyers versus, you know, second- and third-time buyers moving up?
Yes, I can't talk for the industry in Pittsburgh and talk for my company. And it's about 25%, maybe 20 to 25% are first-time buyers.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a picture of who that first-time home buyer is? What are they looking for? Where are they looking in general?
Well, they're looking for one of the reasons they like buying here is because of the affordability. And that's an index that we use. It's the nice mix of homes available using the 28% of the income spent for the pity payment. If you remember back in high school, the pity payment is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And that's using the current rate. And the current rate right now is 4.25% for 30-year, 20% down. So maybe a $50,000 household income ideally could afford maybe $200,000. But oftentimes those buyers have debts, school loans, car loans. And so they can't afford maybe $200,000. Because of their debts, maybe they can afford $125,000 to $150,000.
Are there certain communities that are hot, that people are looking for? You mentioned the several counties of the metro area. Are there certain communities that are, you know, more desirable?
Yes, certainly. The housing industry in Lawrenceville has done very, very well. Southside has always been strong, at least for the past 20 years, so that's always still a very desirable place to go. And also, but as the buyers become older, as they have families, they tend to move away from these urban areas into the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. Are young adults in general putting off home buying, and why? You mentioned college debt before, but in general, are first-time home buyers a little older than they used to be?
I think so. I'm not sure if that's as a result of their debts or their life situation. I don't know. They seem to be a little bit older.
So how much of an impact is the end of the first-time home buyer tax credit? Is that impacting yet on first-time home buyers, do you think?
It doesn't seem to, but what we have, what the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors has done, is introduced two bills, or a bill to the State Senate of Pennsylvania, and it's called the First Time Home Buyers Savings Account Bill, and the website is firsthomepa.com, and it gives an opportunity for parents, grandparents, or even the individuals to save up to $50,000 to get a reduction in their state taxes, and all that money can be used towards the purchase of their first home.
What about new developments? We see them popping up, whether it's within the city of Pittsburgh or in the suburbs. We see new housing developments going up. How are they impacting the availability on the market, but also the average sale prices?
Yes. The further out of this from the city you get in the newer suburbs, the prices of the homes are increasing. In Shaler, as an example, we can't develop a whole lot more property. So the prices of the homes in Shaler are maybe $180,000, $175,000 on average.
So it's going to be repurposed stock within a community such as Shaler rather than new construction.
Yes. As you move out in the suburbs in Marshall, in Butler and Beaver counties, they are opening up new areas for development.
Do you think that if those boost the overall prices, that can be a discouraging factor for first-time homebuyers? Or does it all just come down to their financial situation?
I think you're right, Kevin. It comes down to their financial situation. Many first-time homebuyers in Pittsburgh can't afford $400,000 and $500,000, $500,000 homes. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly other homes and communities where they can find very affordable and nice homes in great school districts.
You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation about sort of that steady growth mm-hmm. in the Pittsburgh metro market. Put on your prognosticator's cap here. Is this going to continue, do you think, in that way? Do you see any factors that might change it for the better or for the worse?
In talking with our chief economist at NAR, which is National Association of Realtors, his name is Lawrence Yoon, and listening to him, he doesn't seem a big downturn or any downturn in the near future, whatever that is, mm-hmm. you know, 6 months, 12 months, it seems to be that we're going to continue this strong, this relatively strong growth across the country, most parts of the country, but it is absolutely interest rate driven.
Is that predictability good for your company? Is that predictability even good for buyers?
I think that that helps people feel safe in investing in their future, in their homes. In Pittsburgh area, if we have that 3 to 5% steady growth rate, at least if they purchase, they might be reasonably sure that it's not going to be swing up wildly and then swing down wildly also. So I think I believe it would be a positive thing to have this steady, predictable growth rate.
Arch Ottenreith is president of the Realtors Association of Metropolitan Pittsburgh. Arch, thanks so much for coming in today.
Appreciate it.
I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Allegheny County Health Department this past year issued significant fines against U.S. Steel for emissions violations at Clairton Coke Works. The most recent was announced last week, and another is expected as a result of emissions after a December fire that damaged the facility's pollution controls. Joining us to talk about this is Amy Sisk. She covers energy for WESA and State Impact Pennsylvania. Amy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Kevin. Glad to be here.
Okay, the penalty announced last week, $700,000. So what was that for?
So that fine was for ongoing emissions violations at Clairton Coke Works that took place during the second half of 2018. So inspectors for the Allegheny County Health Department noted that there were 129 violations during the third quarter of last year and then 75 violations during the fourth quarter of last year.
Emissions of what?
So we're talking about emissions of coke oven gas, which is generated when you bake coal at a really high temperature in an oven to form coke. And then coke is then used in the steelmaking process. Now, coke oven gas contains things like particulate matter and hydrogen sulfide and benzene. And none of those things are good for public health in high amounts. And coke oven gas can leak from facilities like this. And so, of course, the goal is to have zero leaks, but inevitably there's a lot of potential emission points at this facility, so there's going to be some.
$700,000 fine, but this isn't the first big fine against U.S. Steel for these problems, correct?
Correct. The Allegheny County Health Department last June started to step up its enforcement of these problems at Clairton. And since June of last year, in total, it's issued about $2 million in penalties against U.S. Steel. And one thing that's worth noting is that the Health Department told U.S. Steel that if you aren't able to rein in emissions from Clairton, then we will potentially idle some of the worst performing batteries at the facility.
Okay. So we've seen a drop, though, in violations. Is that correct? And Well, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, that is a good thing. And the health department says we have seen a drop. The worst performing quarter last year was the second quarter, where there were 160 violations. Mm-hmm. And we have seen that number come down, which the health department credits to, better training of U.S. Steel employees and upgrades of equipment at the facility.
None of these fines we've talked about are a result of the fire that happened December 24th. And damage the pollution controls at Clairton. Do we know when the health department might levy a fine for that violation? How much could it be?
So I don't have a sense for when that fine is going to come or what it's going to be. I do expect it will be significant. The health department has a formula that it uses to calculate fines like this, and it takes into consideration a number of different factors, some of which would be the duration of the problem at the facility, whether the company has had past violations, what sort of harm was caused to the public or to the environment, and how cooperative the company has been in working with the health department to respond to problems.
All right. We have less than a minute left. So what's the status of Clairton's operations right now?
So U.S. Steel said last week that its repaired pollution controls are back up and fully running, which is a good thing. They had been down for 3 months since that fire. And that came more than a week ahead of the deadline that the County Health Department had set for U.S. Steel to get those pollution controls back up and running. And ultimately, that means that we're hopefully going to see fewer sulfur dioxide emissions from this facility. Sulfur dioxide is a respiratory irritant, and we've been seeing more of those emissions since that fire took place.
Very good. Amy Sisk covers energy for WESA and State Impact Pennsylvania. Amy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Kevin.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, we'll have a conversation with the president of the environmental group Penn Future, Jacqueline Bonomo. What more can be done to make the Clairton Coke Works run more efficiently? And is the health department enforcing standards strongly enough? If you missed anything from today's program, or if you'd like to catch up on past shows, please visit wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcast. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski, production assistance by Mick Stinelli, Julia Zenkovich, and Alex Lenigan. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.